is in for Mace, and we're getting ready to talk to Scott Boris, and Scott joins us now. Scott has been nice enough to be on the program a few times during this pandemic and has been on the forefront of trying to get baseball back, and now we've got it. Scott, thank you for doing this, and let me start with this. We've reached an agreement. We're heading towards baseball, but COVID is still very prevalent. How confident are you that baseball will be able to execute this plan as they've laid it out?
Well, good afternoon, John. Brian, it's a pleasure to be with you, and nice to be talking about a baseball season.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah, we have many facilities in baseball. We have many sites. We also have a virus that is really well understood now, well beyond what it was in March. I think we understand that the what has been the diagnostics, the prognostication of what we're going to do with athletes in this age group, and that's kind of been defined in the protocol, where they're really limited in their exposure and what they do. They're around their group. We know the percentages of hospitalization so far for baseball players who have been playing around the world it hasn't happened yet. And anyone who's obviously contracted the virus, they go through the protocols of the isolation, and they're tested obviously before they return. So really our best practices are much more defined, and obviously baseball is a social distancing game. Where we can really carry on the game in a way that we can do a lot to really invoke the best practices to allow for the game to operate normally and yet also operate efficiently for the virus.
You know, Scott, like fans, I think it was hard, I think it's sometimes for fans to follow along with what was going on in terms of the negotiations with the league. From a player's perspective, can you kind of break down why it seemed not to work, like what they weren't seeing from the league?
Well, I think when you're a commissioner, you have owners that want different things. And it was very clear to me that we had an agreement in March so that this would be able to be resolved rather amicably and quickly. We knew it was going to be prorated salaries. That was defined and given in the March agreement in a separate paragraph. And then there would be a resumption of play, and these measures would be looked at to define that. Owners had from April 10th, and they didn't make an offer until March 26th. Why? And the answer was that they really didn't want a lot of games. And we ended up with a college season instead of a major league season. And the reason for that was that they could have implemented and had the game operating very efficiently in spring training in June and July. And the fact of the matter was that there was probably a contingent of owners that wanted more games. If you owned sports networks, it was going to be much more valuable for you to have that and to broadcast games and to create revenues from the RSNs that you own. And for others who don't have it, they probably didn't want the risk of the season. So there was a real fracture in the ownership as to some wanted it, some didn't. And the way that you negotiate, if you're a lawyer for the owners, is that you try to blame the process on something other than your contingent, and you therefore, in my mind, don't really present anything other than what could have been done a month ago. We could have been playing, but they could have implemented this, and we could have had a 100-game season. But the reality of it is we ended up with 60.
Scott Boris is with us. Scott, explain to me why the players didn't take the last offer. The last offer the owners made was for 60 games. They turned it down. We ended up at 60 games anyway. From your perspective, why was the last owner's offer rejected?
Well, if someone came up to you and you said, I had a house and a lot next door. The lot next door is worth billions. And so I'll buy your house, but I'm only going to give you a few million for the lot, but I won't buy the house without the lot. And then the person with the house says, well, I'm not selling the house and the lot because the lot is worth billions more. And that's the playoff, extended playoff rights. That's the rights for advertising on the sleeve. It is also the grievance right, where you obviously have an agreement where the owners were obligated to negotiate under good faith. So it was very clear that for a value that was much less, you're not going to sell the house and the lot. You're just going to basically let them invoke their right to purchase the house and then leave the other rights for future consideration.
And so what happens going forward? Because, you know, there are a lot of you know, concerns for fans at what this is going to mean, not just for this year, but for the relationship between the union and the league and what it means for making sure that games happen next year.
Well, games are going to be played next year because we have a CBA that runs through 2021. Mm-hmm. And so the reality of it is that it's basically putting together an agreement like any other CBA negotiation that will go after the 21 season and forward. Mm-hmm.
Right. Remember, thank you.
Yeah. There are a lot of owners. There are a lot of owners in this game that I think are very caring owners. They're really, you know, excellent businessmen. And I think they care a lot about the game. But the reality of it is that when you have a representation that guides you in a direction that's, I think, been favorable for you. But the point of it is that you have to wonder who's making the decisions in this as you go forward. And the thing about it is our game is tremendously successful. It's funny. The minute that the agreement is done, we're talking about fans in the ballpark already in Houston and Cincinnati. We're talking about a major multi-billion-dollar project in Anaheim. None of this information comes out about the growth, the volume, the revenues that come from a per-game dynamic where you're going to build in a parking lot in Anaheim all this magnificent development. Well, why is it there? And why would people go there? And why are people there? And the answer is because players play games there. And so, and none of those revenues are ever included into the revenue structure of the game. So one of the reasons you never really agree to a revenue-based agreement or a salary cap is because the definition of revenue is near impossible to define because it is a something that has to be done almost neutrally of the parties in the negotiation.
We're talking to Scott Boras, baseball super agent, who's nice enough to join us. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Okay, Scott, you, on top of being a really good agent, are a really big baseball fan. What should I make of the universal DH, the runner starting on second base? Are these things I should be excited about, or should I be worried about them, or where do you stand on the kind of temporary rules we're going to have, at least for this 60-game sprint?
Well, John, as you know, I was a, you know, college and professional baseball player.
Right.
We don't put runners on second base for me. you have to earn your way. We have to play the game. The DH is fine because we have to protect pitchers. We can't put pitchers out there in a shortened season, particularly where their hamstrings diving. They're getting them ready and getting them ready in such a short period of time. Major league athletes are not conditioned to a college season. And the reason is that the durability required for them to perform normally is literally three times that of a college season. We play 162 games, not 60. And so when you're putting unique conditions on pitchers, you're putting them at great risk. So the DH, in my mind, was a great idea. The runner on second base thing is somehow Little League Dad got into our rule committee for me. So,
Scott, there's obviously a ton of attention focused on what's happening at the major league level. But what do you think is the impact of what's happening at the minor league level with, you know, the cancellation of games and seasons and things like that?
Well, you know, we have the future of our game. And I know I've got, you know, just 50, 60 brilliant clients that are in the minor leagues, and they're at levels. And can you imagine that almost 4 years ago, Cody Bellinger is playing a double-A season, and he is readying himself to go out and be the rookie of the year and the eventual MVP of the Dodgers. And that all happened basically in about a year and 1 month of minor league play. So you understand how development in the minor leagues and the men and in these organizations, these coaches, and the fact that you have game settings and the learning aptitude where you learn pro baseball. Pro baseball is different from all other sports because it is a season of 150 to, you know, literally 180 games. And so you have to learn a mental approach. You have to learn a physical approach. It's very different than event sports like football, where you play once a week and you're used to playing once a week from college to high school to pro. In baseball, you are literally playing three times the amount of games you've ever played in a pro environment. So you have to learn how to stand. You have to actually go out to a field and stand for literally 25 minutes, you know, nine times in a field, and then get the ups downs. And there's a rhythm to the game that your body has to get adjusted to, and mentally you have to get adjusted to. So losing a year of really development for a lot of players is retarding the major leagues. And we don't want to do anything to prevent the great talent that rests down there. And there's many, many stars that are going to be in the major leagues very quickly. And hopefully we're going to devise a developmental system here where we can play games in August and September and October and get these players a season so they can not lose a full year in 2020.
We're talking to Scott Boras. Scott, last thing for me, if we brought Buster Olney on the show the other day, and Buster is worried that there are going to be certain players that won't participate in this 60-game season, that whether they are free agents that don't want to risk lowering their free agent value, whether they're concerned about coronavirus, whether they're just mad that the owners shoved a season down their throat. You represent a lot of players. Do you feel that way at all? Do you feel that there will be players, or have any of your clients expressed a desire to you to sit this out for any of those reasons or something else I didn't think of?
No, the players I represent, they've chewed the paint off the wall. They've swallowed the drywall. They have eaten the nails, and now they're about ready to destroy the building to get back on the field. So I assure you that the people that I want, they want to play baseball, and they want to go at it really, really hard and do what they do. They want to get their rhythm back. Their life and what they've done their entire life has been interrupted. There may be players that want to play, but they have medical prohibitions, and we have in our agreement, we have consideration for that, where if the medical experts believe that a player is at risk, obviously he will receive his compensation and play. But other than that, if a player chooses not to play, he would forego his salary, and he would also forego the rhythm of playing and being away from the game for nearly almost 17 months before he hits a free agent market. I'm not sure that would be a wise decision for a player if he's interested in marketing his services to an owner.
Scott, thank you very much for doing this, man. I know you've been rooting for this to get back out onto the field, and it's finally there, and we appreciate you kind of walking us through it along the way. Look forward to seeing you at the ballpark if and when they let us go back.
John, I must tell you, I've never wanted to see you more.
Amen. Thank you, Scott. Great talking to you. All right, there's Scott Boras. And Brian, how about you? Do you buy what Buster's selling, that there could be players that just say, screw it, I'm not doing it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when you start to break down the amount of money that guys will get and how much they take care of, like if you don't need it and you're really worried about it, maybe you don't pass that bar that Scott Boras was talking about in terms of, a medical clearance to say you're at risk, but you feel like you are. I mean, I could see people not going, it's for $1 million if you have 20 million in the bank.
All right. Coming up next, there is an idea that is so bad that is so not worth considering that, of course, it has been fully endorsed by corporate Greg Bergman. I'll share that idea with you next.
Oh, God. Okay.
Brian Kamenetsky filling in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland show. Our thanks to Scott Boras for coming on, spending a few minutes with us. Brian Kamenetsky is filling in for Mace. And, Brian, when the announcement was made yesterday that baseball was coming back, a lot of people started coming up with ideas. It's going to come back at least at first without fans because of the coronavirus. And so some fan came up with an idea to which Greg Bergman, the former producer of this show, And now the one of the corporate overlords and the man who canceled Fast Track, for that
yes.
matter, tweets, I love this idea so much. How do we make this happen? Here's the idea. Like a, it was suggested by a Dodger fan named Roger Schill. Like a drive-in movie, fans should be able to listen to the game in their cars in the parking lot. Honking would replace cheering. So let's think about this for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a giant big screen TV at home. I can lounge out. I can eat whatever I want. Bergman wants me to get in my car, drive to Dodger Stadium, sit in traffic, park my car, where I'd undoubtedly be charged for parking, sit in my car for another 3.5 hours, where I could not, so I had to be socially distanced from other fans. I couldn't go out and do anything. And when Cody Bellinger hits a double, I honk.
All right.
How, what am I missing here? How is that in any way comfortable, smart, or a good idea?
Here's how I think you could make this work. The way you're describing it sounds really stupid.
By the way, I want you to think about, because Bergman right. obviously did, and we'll open the phones for this, by the way, 877-710-3776. If I'm missing something, please point it out.
But here's 877-710-ESPN.
Oh, by the way, Brian, out of Manhattan Beach,
mm-hmm.
to get to Dodger Stadium and sit in the parking lot for a yeah. 7 o'clock game, I'm leaving my house at 4:30. I'm sitting in my car. I'm sitting in my car until 10 o'clock. Then driving home, I get home at 11. 4:30 to 11 in my car. Thank you very much. Great idea.
Again, it's not how I would do it. But here's what you could do if you wanted to make this thing work. You have to make it a real drive-in. Like, you got to set up multiple screens that are projecting the game. You have to have ballpark food being cooked in the parking lot that you can go get, you know, socially distanced, and you know, or it's delivered to your car, whatever it is, so you can get Dodger dogs and nachos and, well, not beer.
And I'm terrible. Eating, yeah,
not beer.
I'm eating them in my
you're
car.
Eating, you're eating it in your car.
So you've got now you've got nacho cheese in between the seats of my car. Keep going.
Bergman already has nacho cheese in between the seats of his car. So, like, the kind of person that's probably going to do this is a slovenly human being like Bergman. And he's going to go and do it like, you know, your car is nice and pristine or whatever. Maybe it's not for you. But I'm just saying, if you're going to do this, you have to really make it like a drive-in experience where you can get snacks and you can watch the game and you can do all that stuff. Then it's a little bit more communal. That's not a terrible idea. The one where you just sit and listen to the radio and honk when good things happen, that is a terrible idea. Nobody should pay for that.
By the way, you know who owns the parking lot at Dodger Stadium?
Frank McCourt.
Bergman is trying to put money in the pocket of Frank McCourt. How bad of an idea is this? Oh, let me count the ways. I'm sitting in my car for 7 hours. By the way, Brian, how are we handling the bathroom aspect of this?
Oh, Port-a-Johns, like, I suppose.
Right. Who do you know anyone who likes Port-a-Johns?
I mean, like, prefers them over a regular one? I mean,
No, nobody.
Yeah, it's not a great one. I'm just saying it can be done.
Here's Paul. No, it should never be done. Paul in North Hollywood on line one. Hey, Paul, you're on 710 ESPN. What am I missing here, Paul? Why is this idea not terrible?
John, I don't agree with a lot of things you say. For instance, you're a UCLA fan. Big no-no for me. But I'm 1,000% on your side. This is the worst idea I've ever heard. I'm praying that by the time games get going, maybe 3,000 to 5,000 fans could be let in. Social distancing can be, you know, put at hand, but this is the worst idea of all time. I'm 100% on your side, and let's not put money into the man that robbed the Dodgers, Mr. Frank McCourt.
Thank you, Paul, for calling. Any idea that makes Frank McCourt rich? I can't imagine Dodger fans would embrace. 877-710-3776. Here's Dan in Las Vegas. Hey, Dan, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, in lieu of all other problems that you and Brian are coming up with, John, you're on the radio. So when you call a game, I don't hear it for 30 seconds, right?
Oh, at least 10. Yeah, we're all in a seven-second delay in case somebody yells the F word.
Okay, perfect. So what's the point of Justin hearing, Justin Turner hearing the horns as he's rounding to second base? It's already too late.
I didn't even think about that.
That is an excellent point.
Bergman is a plethora of bad ideas.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome, sir.
We appreciate you calling. Oh, wait a minute. Here's Jeff in El Monte. He says he would do the parking lot thing. Jeff, say it isn't so. You think this idea works?
Well, the only thing I'm thinking is that it's never been done before. So it's a new experience. Obviously, I don't want to be around anybody, but I still want to enjoy the Dodger Stadium and the whole experience as far as, like, the scenery. The delay does suck. I'll admit that, but I think it's something cool. It sounds something that's never been done before.
Like, wouldn't you need the full drive-in experience of being able to see the game and get concessions and stuff like that? Or are you just going to sit in the parking lot and listen and honk when something happens?
Well, I think, obviously, if there's no concession stands, I'm going to obviously bring my own snacks and, you know, be ready for all that. The bathroom obviously is the issue, but I don't know. It just sounds cool to me. It sounds like, you know, a different way for Dodger fans to come together and celebrate the Dodgers that we can't enjoy right now. And I'm a DirecTV fan, so it's going to be even cooler for me because, you know, I haven't seen them for years. So I think it'd just be something different.
All right, thanks for the phone call. I'm surprised that Bergman even got one vote here because – as a play-by-play announcer, Brian, the ultimate compliment is when somebody's driving home and the game is so good they won't get out of their car.
Mm-hmm.
But no one, I don't imagine that anyone sits in their car for 2.5-3 hours just to listen to Michael and I do a game because you're in your car. Your car is not the world's most comfortable seat. Here's Art in Camarillo. Hey, Art, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
How you doing? I think it's a terrible idea. People are going to be able to buy a case of beer for $20, sit in their car, drink 15 or 20 beers, and they get drive drunk. That's not good.
Yeah, well, they, like Brian pointed out, they wouldn't be able to sell beer, obviously.
No. In the car.
He's talking about bring your own. Yeah, that's its own problem.
Bring your own beer. Well, and they're going to sit in their car and drink all the beer and drive. For $20, you can have a case of beer.
Hey, Art, you live in Camarillo. How long would it take? What time would you leave your house to get to a 7 o'clock Dodger game?
Probably at latest 5. I mean, right. Give me a couple hours. It's an hour. But you can give yourself a couple hours.
So you're there from 5, and then you're getting home at 11. I mean, it's just, and you never get out of your car. The bathroom alone is a problem.
Here's what, you know, I just
understand that, but in 5 hours, how much beer can you drink? And nobody who's going to monitor
is that a challenge, Art?
I could do an easy 12 pack,
right?
Team pack.
That's what I'm saying. Here's how actually, but like we're all ignoring the obvious thing here. It's not that the drive-in is a terrible idea. It's that you don't have to do it at Dodger Stadium. What they should do is set up drive-ins like the movie theater in big parking lots everywhere around the city. So you can just go with other Dodger fans in the neighborhood and watch Dodger baseball on giant screens outdoors, get your hot dogs, get your stuff. There's no reason to drive all the way to Dodger Stadium just to look at the outside of Dodger Stadium to do this. But the idea of being in the parking lot watching a game with other Dodger fans where people honk and good stuff happens, that's not a bad idea. I think I just fixed it.
No, you didn't. It's a terrible idea. thank you, Art, for the phone call. Brian, you're not grasping the 7 hours in your car.
No, but John, I just took all that time off the commute. Now, instead of driving from Camarillo to Dodger Stadium, Art just stays in Camarillo with other Dodger fans in Camarillo in a giant Walmart parking lot in Camarillo, and they watch the game where? In Camarillo together. Now, that's fun in a big drive-in parking lot thing where they're all together and all the Dodgers fans are there. It's the driving part all the way into town to sit outside the stadium that's really stupid.
Do you realistically, when are we getting fans back in stadiums in any of these sports? When do you think the earliest is?
When do you think they'll be allowed, or when do you think fans will show up in any kind of numbers?
When will they be allowed? It sounds like in places like Texas, they might be allowed next month.
Well, they're freewheeling it down there. No, there will not be fans in buildings in Texas next month, by the way. But I will say, I'm not sure. I don't think we'll see it until 2021. I'm really starting to think that.
Wow. Man, 2020 just needs to be erased. 2020 is an absolute mess.
I actually believe 2020 should be extended as long as it needs to be so that 2021 isn't ruined by any of this. So, like, if it's still bad in January, just keep calling it 2020, because I don't want 2021 to be tainted. We all need a fresh start. We need a good year. And so however long this takes, let's just keep calling it 2020, and then we'll have a good year when 2021 turns around, because I don't want 2021 to be as bad as 2020.
All right, I have an idea. Since baseball's coming back, assume baseball's coming back and it doesn't get kneecapped by COVID, okay? I have an idea that is either really, really stupid, like Greg Bergman stupid, or a little bit genius. I'll throw it at you next. Brian Kamenetsky in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. Okay, Mace and Ireland show. Brian Kamenetsky's filling in for Mace. At the top of the hour, as Lindsay doesn't like to say, 5 o'clock, we have headlines. That's all the stuff we haven't gotten to yet today. And then C.J. Nitkowski, former Major League Baseball pitcher turned broadcaster, is going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. We also have Game of Games. All that's still to come in the show. All right, Brian, here's my idea, and I can't decide if it's really, really stupid or a little bit brilliant. But I haven't voiced it out loud to anyone. Okay? You're going to be the first person I tell. And the entire radio audience. All right. And Lindsay, I'm particularly interested in your opinion since baseball is your favorite sport.
Okay.
All right. 60-game season, right? Coming up on a 60-game season. So that means starting pitchers are minimized. Clayton Kershaw, for example, is probably only going to get 10 starts, right? In a 60-game season. If he pitches every 6 days, he's going to get 10 to 12 starts. Okay? If I've got a guy like Walker Buehler or Clayton Kershaw, wouldn't it be smart to eliminate starting pitchers? In other words, use them 3 times a week rather than just 10 times a season. Turn everybody into a reliever? Or is that just the worst idea ever? In other words, if I could get Clayton Kershaw and Walker Buehler into 20 to 25 games rather than 10 games, isn't that smart?
I don't think it's a terrible idea. I mean, they're 60. You get to carry 60 people, correct? Like, that's the deal. Right. Like, so you have access to 60 players. And theoretically, you
way
can
more
of,
arms.
Right, way more arms and people you can, like. I don't think it's a. It would be hard to retrain someone like Kershaw to be a reliever and then build him back up. But in terms of like executing,
he did it. He's done in the playoffs.
Right, but never for like a 60 guy. I don't think it's a terrible idea. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I could be talked off of it by someone who knows more about pitching than I do. But the idea of just mixing and matching all of these guys. Now, are they doing the rule now where you have to do the three batters, right? That stays through all this stuff.
I don't know if it survived the health and safety protocols for 2020. Lindsay, what do you think of that idea in general?
I think it's a good idea because I think maybe even like doing a four-man rotation is a good idea, but I also think it's going to take a while to get those guys back up to that point, you know? Mm-hmm.
But where isn't that part of it? Like, they're going to get an abbreviated spring training, right? In spring training games, your pitchers only pitch 3 innings anyway, right? So just start the season that way.
Well, then that's
going to
happen.
Long term, though.
Long term, though, guys will hate the idea because of money. Starting pitchers make so much more than relievers.
But Brian, I'm saying that we're just doing my idea for the sprint.
Oh, I know, but John, if it works, you know, teams will. It's like the Rays already do that kind of stuff where
they use what you
the
call
the reverse starter.
They call him an opener rather than a closer.
And so, that kind of thing, like, you know, teams are sort of moving in that direction anyway, just based on the analytics and the game and how that works. Players will see that, you know, sort of see the writing on the wall, and they'll freak out. As a strategic move, it's probably not bad, certainly for this season. But I think overall, if you want players to really freak out, that's a good way to do it.
Because, Lindsay, think about the Nationals. Strasburg and Scherzer could pitch in 20 games each. Instead of 10 games each.
Sure. And I think that the fact that they are going to have a very, very abbreviated, quote, spring training. I mean, think of how much earlier most pitchers, like, decide to report to spring training anyway. Just, you know, they voluntarily show up early so they can make sure that they can build up their arm strength and pitch a whole game. And even early on in the season, a lot of pitchers aren't going out there pitching more than, you know, like 7 innings, I would say. So I think at first it's going to be that way just because they don't have the time to build up their arm strength. And I think that it also gives an advantage to a lot of these managers that are kind of like old school guys or the guys who know how to really manipulate the bullpen. For example, like Tito in the Indians, I think that's, you know, he's kind of known for being able to place the pitchers in the best situation. And I think a lot of teams are going to use that to their advantage. I think you're onto something, John.
How about that? I thought it was maybe the worst. I thought it was Greg Bergman bad. And if it catches on, I'm taking full credit. All right.
That, by the way, that's an acronym that needs to happen. GBS for Greg Bergman Stupid. Is that a good idea or is it GBS?
I'm not stopping that movement. Speaking of a movement, okay. So coming up next, before we get to headlines at the top of the hour, coming up next, and we'll let you guys weigh in on this. We'll take calls. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. Okay, so the way I glommed onto this, Brian, was that a bunch of people that I follow on Twitter who are sports people, people like J.A. Adonde and John Hollinger and a bunch of others, have gone down this rabbit hole, and I want all four of us, as well as the audience, to go down this rabbit hole next. All right? Now, all I'm going to ask is, do you promise you'll be honest? Brian, do you promise you'll be honest?
No.
Okay. Lindsay.
I will try.
Lindsay, do you promise you'll be honest?
Yes.
Funch, honesty promise. All right. Here's the question. Don't answer it now. We'll take a break and answer it on the other side. There is a reporter at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette named Alexis Johnson who asked this question, and it has now gone viral. And I have two answers for this. You can have more than one, but you have to be honest. Here's the question. Name a show or a movie where you cried while watching it, but really didn't expect to. In other words, it snuck up on you and you teared up. And you have to be honest. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-3776. We'll tackle it next. 710-ESPN. All right, breaking news on the Mason and Ireland show. Speaking of crying, there has been mass crying at the Kamenetsky household. Brian, explain the situation. What is happening?
All right. I am currently in the laundry room, and I am spraying down the sheets for the baby.
Now, how old is your baby?
She's about 19 months old, 18 months old, and there has been a poo-splosion. details are still forthcoming. I have not been able to get the full scoop from my wife. But there's poo. There's been a daytime rinsing of the child. And she is upstairs crying. I I will hope to find sources with more information as the show continues. Okay. But I am. So it was a bleep show, John.
Yes, we may have Brian may have to excuse himself, literally and figuratively, during this segment. All right. The question is: name a show or movie that you cried at, that made you cry while you were watching, but you didn't see it coming. You didn't really expect to. And we have a promise of honesty from everyone on the show. Funches, movie you teared up at. What is it?
Two movies, actually. And I did not expect to cry at these movies at all because they're superhero movies. Yes. One of them was Logan, which was Hugh Jackman's last appearance as Wolverine.
Yes, that one really rips your heart out.
Yeah, right?
Oh, my God.
Right. And then also Avengers Endgame, obviously. I don't want to spoil the ending of it for anyone that didn't watch it yet, but that one is a tearjerker.
All right. Lindsay, movie that made you cry where you didn't see it coming.
I'm going to go with the Mr. Rogers documentary.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you cry?
Oh, like half of it. I cried throughout a lot of it. Have you seen it? And I'm not talking about the cinematic version with Tom Hanks. I'm talking about the actual documentary.
Okay. I thought you were talking about the one with Tom Hanks. I didn't cry at all in that. And I'm a crier.
I didn't even like that one. In fact, I turned it off after 10 minutes. But the documentary that was done,
I think it
was last year. It's so good. It's so good.
All right. So far, none of these are as embarrassing as what mine are going to be. Brian, what are yours?
I'm not embarrassed by the things that made me cry, like everything. Like if you put it, like I will cry at commercials now if it's like some touching thing about like a kid.
I almost teared up in a commercial yesterday. It was one of those public service announcements. Did you see it? Where a girl, it's obvious that a high school girl has some type of cancer and she's going through chemo, and a high school boy wants to ask her to the prom, so he goes to the barber shop and gets his head shaved so it'll look like hers, and then he knocks on her door and he has two of his friends hold up a sign that say, "Will you go to prom with me?" And they lower the sign and she sees him with a crew cut that he shaved off all of his head, and it almost got me. I stopped just short. But your point that a commercial can get you is not totally a reach. That commercial almost got me. So what's your movie?
My two movies that always, the end of Field of Dreams always makes me cry.
Dave Singer. That's Dave Singer's movie. Yeah.
And have you ever seen Searching for Bobby Fischer?
The chess movie, not
the
long
the movie
time.
About the kid who plays chess. That one always makes me cry. Like, always makes me cry.
Okay. So my two are embarrassing, but I guarantee you if I watched them tonight, I would probably tear up. All right. The first one is Mr. Holland's Opus.
Oh, wow.
Where Richard Dreyfuss at the end thinks his life has been misspent. He gets laid. You know, teachers are getting laid off all over the place. So he works at a high school in Los Angeles. He's been the music teacher there for 30 years. And then budget cutbacks hit, and they fire him. And his wife and his son come to pick him up to because he needs help getting all the stuff out of his office. You know how you pack up your office when you get fired and you're loading it up? And there's all this noise in the hallway, and he doesn't know what it is. And he opens the door, and they have a giant assembly where all of his music students and all the current students have packed the auditorium because they've all come back to say goodbye to him. And his wife gets up and starts explaining how this all came together. And she goes, "Hold on. Our master of ceremonies has just arrived." And a girl who was really early in the movie, who's turned out to be the governor, comes back and explains why his life wasn't misspent. And she talks about how he always had this opus that he was writing that he was going to make him famous and going to make him rich. And he's not famous and he's not rich. And she talks about how the students, the kids, are his opus. And I just lose it every time it comes on. Have you seen that movie?
It's been years. I have, but it's been years.
I have no idea why it gets me, but it gets me every stinking time. Now, here's the one that's even more embarrassing. I can't believe I'm going to admit this. At the end of League of Their Own, when Gina Davis and Lori Petty, you know, they played on that women's baseball team, and they go back to the Hall of Fame, and the two sisters see each other. That gets me too. That gets me too.
Well, what's embarrassing about that? That's sisters who were sharing like this special time and love each other. That's nice. It's a nice memory.
Yes, but okay. Oh, Mark Cates, our top sales guy, Mark Cates, just had a really good one. Toy Story 3. Have you guys seen Toy Story 3?
Oh yeah.
So Adonde's movie, when he jumped in on this, is one of Mason's. Mason cries at this movie, is Up. Have you guys seen the movie Up?
Oh, my God. Up always. Yes, that's a great example. I love that movie, and it absolutely makes me cry.
Right. In the first 10 minutes,
yes,
you basically learn that there's this old guy, and he won't, you know, the story is he won't get out of his house. They want to knock down his house for development, and he won't get out of it. And you learn the reason why he won't get out. Because it reminds him of his wife. Him and his wife did everything together, and they go through this montage. And this is animated, Brian. This is a cartoon
movie. It's the first like 2 minutes of the movie.
And you go back and see how he fell in love with his wife, and then she got cancer and died, and that's why he won't get out of the house. And if you can make it through those 15 minutes, man, you're a better man than I. That gets you all the time. All right, so
yeah, those are good.
All right, so a lot of people online want to get in on this. Damien in Torrance. Hey, Damien, you're on 710 ESPN. Which one's yours?
Okay, well, first, Funches selections came in a close second because I do remember me and my son crying at the end of Logan and Endgame. But the one I would have to say I'm mildly embarrassed to admit is The Notebook. So the Notebook.
No, that's not embarrassing. That like you
I think that's one of your favorites, right?
well, is it at the end when she realizes that it's them that he's telling story about?
Let me set it up. So that movie came out when I was in high school, and I was a junior in high school, and I just remember, you know, at that time I had a girlfriend, and I grew up in a rough part of town. I grew up with a rough crowd. I remember thinking to myself, we went to go watch the movie. Halfway through the movie, thinking, I think I'm going to cry in this movie. And right at the end, I thought, oh, I'm crying. And I tried to watch it one other time years ago, couldn't make it all the way through because it's just way too much.
Oh, those are good ones, Damien. Thank you. All right. Now, Mitch from Palmdale has a sleeper. As a matter of fact, when this whole thread started, this was the movie that the reporter from Pittsburgh said was hers. Mitch, what's the one that got you that you didn't see it coming?
Yeah, this was a real sleeper. Click with Adam Sandler. I was expecting a funny movie, and then all of a sudden that scene in the rain where he's chasing after his son.
Brian, have you seen that movie, Click, with Adam Sandler?
I have not. No, I have not.
Okay, so it's basically the story of, Mitch, back me up if I get this wrong, but it's basically the story of a guy, Sandler plays a guy who has given up everything to be hugely successful in business. Like, he's made a ton of money, but along the way, he's got divorced, and he lost his family, his kids, and he's at his daughter's wedding, and he realizes that he made the wrong choice, that chasing money instead of taking care of your family is the wrong thing. And it's when he's having that heart attack, Mitch, and he can barely get any words out, and he says, "Family comes first," to his son, is when it got you, right?
Oh, man, that was heartbreaking. It's tough to watch.
You know, okay, but major problem there in Click. There's no way Adam Sandler is leaving Kate Beckinsale for any reason. There's way. If Adam Sandler was able to hook Kate Beckinsale and convince her to marry him, there's no way he's breaking up. Major plot flaw in that movie. Thank you, Mitch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for calling in. Brian, you should watch that movie. That's not a bad movie.
I'm not a huge Sandler guy, although I did finally get around to watching Uncut Gems last week, and it's really good.
Yeah, I thought it was great. All right, last one, David in West Covina. David, what got you that you didn't see coming?
Mine is a series. It's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, where Will's father comes back, and Uncle Phil's fighting with him, like, no, this guy's garbage, and then Will fights like, hey, you're not my father, you're just my uncle, and then Will's father ends up leaving him, and Uncle Phil consoles him, and that part wasn't actually scripted. That's from Will's actual life, and he's like, how come you don't want me no more? and they hug, man, that got me so much.
Wait a minute, David, you just heard me admit I cried at a bunch of stupid stuff. You cried at the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
I'm not ashamed to admit it. Ain't you proud?
Funches, is this a violation of guy code or is this legit?
No, that episode was really a tearjerker.
It was. Go back and watch it. It'll get right to this day, John.
Okay, David. I will give it a shot. But I think there are movies all the time where you don't see it coming. Tracy Murray, who is our number one saleswoman, says two things to me. Don't tell Cates he's the number one sales guy. It already gets to his big head. And she says the movie The Champ at the end. Ricky Schroeder.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Where John Voight dies. Ugh. Just I watched Love Story the other day. It was on. It was flipping channels. You ever see that with Ryan O'Neal and Ally McGraw?
It's been a while. Yeah, I mean, that's
Lindsay. You
that's
like old movies? You ever seen that movie, Love Story?
No, never heard of it.
Oh my gosh, watch it.
But that was a movie that was designed to make you cry.
Yeah, watch it. Lindsay, I'll be surprised if you don't tear up at that one. All right, coming up next, headlines. All this stuff we haven't gotten to. CJ Nikowski's going to join us coming up, and we still got Game of Games to go. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.